everybody, and welcome to a grungy wild ride with Steve-O. We've got Gavin Rossdale, lead singer of Bush. And man, is this guy a rock star. Not the kind of rock star you would imagine. Very unusual rock star. And a candid one, too. This guy just opens up about everything, even drug addiction. I'm telling you, it gets very juicy. So let's get into it. So you ready to go?
Hell yeah.
All right.
I'm very ready.
Here we go.
I'm excited.
Ladies and gentlemen, Gavin Rossdale.
Hey, how are you?
How's it going, man? Doing great. Thank you for joining us.
I'm happy to join you and Wendy anytime.
In our rapey van.
I like the shoes with skull and crossbone.
It's a little rapey from the outside, but full high tech on the inside, so it's cool.
Yeah. Generally, the consensus is that it looks a lot bigger on camera. Get in here, and it's pretty tight
right,
quarters.
Right.
But the convenience of bringing it to the guest.
It's so amazing. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
We can go get ripped off at Air One afterwards, if you like.
Yeah. You know what?
Anyone who want a $25 coffee? With a shot of gold?
They have the smoothie in there for $25.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, with a shot of ozone for like $100.
That's hilarious.
I did take a girl on a date there once, and she managed to get a smoothie that really was like... They were like, you know, just be getting, and I don't care, whatever, but get it, you know, that'd be $75. I was like, we got a smoothie, right? There's nothing else coming. No, that's it. It's the green goddess of life smoothie.
Yeah.
So
hilarious. I actually can't go get ripped off at Erewhon because I got to get down to San Diego where I'm commentating the Cage Warriors MMA fights.
Wow.
Oh, that's today. Oh, I forgot that. About mm-hmm. that. Yeah.
Love that.
That's sick.
Are you a fan of the fighting?
UFC. Yeah.
Dude, I love it.
I do. I like... I love it. And I'm like, I wince when it starts getting really bloody.
Right.
Lower down the card when people are sort of less good and just getting the shit kicked out of them. And, you know, the faces all over the place. I find that like sometimes quite hard. I don't like when the girls... Maybe you can't say that in 2023. I'm not a big fan of the girls taking each other's faces off. It just feels...
Especially like in bare knuckle, when the girls do bare knuckle boxing, you're just like, holy...
It just feels weird, but I'm traditional like that. I'm probably going
to
get hate mail for that.
But. I don't think you will. I don't think you will. And with what we do, all the jackass stuff,
mm-hmm.
You know, there's always been, you know, oh, you should have an all-girls jackass. And I've always believed...
Jane ass.
Jill ass. I believe that there's something about testosterone.
Right.
About
stupidity and testosterone.
Male, yeah. Like the role that the human men, is to be a provider, a protector... Be macho
and an idiot.
Yeah, exactly. And all of that dynamic makes it funny to see a man fail and get hurt.
Right.
But a woman, her role is to be a nurturer. You know.
You've had women on Jackass, and she got so hurt that you didn't air it, right?
Yeah.
They're
way back when.
Hmm.
We had a Stephanie Hodge, and she broke her back.
Oh. You didn't air it because. It wasn't funny, wasn't cool.
Yeah, there's nothing funny or cool about breaking a woman's back. Yeah.
It's funny when Danger Aaron breaks his neck.
Yeah, that's pretty funny.
But in any case, so we're here to talk about the new Bush album.
Oh, great. Thank you.
Yeah.
Love that. The Art of Survival.
The Art of Survival.
Which is very UFC in of itself. I use that as an analogy a lot of the time because I kind of feel that, you know, we've had so much success as a band, and we kind of like every band, if you've been around forever, you kind of go in and out of hotter times, you know, leaner times, great times. But what I just feel as a band, we're so on fire. It's really exciting. We've been on these tours and just great. You know what I mean? I just appreciate all these people coming out to see us and getting excited about it.
Yeah.
And like, blows me away. You know, you can't take yourself that seriously, but when other people take you seriously, it's kind of cool.
Sure.
You know?
Yeah. We're definitely seeing a revival. It's weird to think that the 90s is subject for nostalgia, but here we are getting old, huh?
Yeah, can't help it. It's how it goes.
It's crazy.
Yeah, the funny thing is like, for us, you know, we never stop trying. We never stop being around. And like certain moments where you get the right tour goes great, or we make the right record. and you have a nice lot of hits off of it, or you make a record that's like less hits on it, you know. So it's just I think it's just wild to still be doing it, you know. Love coming in to do this. It's a fruitful time. I like it, you know. A lot of stuff going on.
How much different is touring in the 90s, 2000s, and 2020s? Is it changed much, or is it same, different attitude?
Well, I think that, you know, the beginning when we began, the audiences were like nuts and more insane. And maybe there's a sense that a lot of those, when we play big festivals, it feels the same. I mean, it's cool. It's just people going crazy. I think it's the person's job, whether you're doing stand-up, whether you're doing music, you have to be entertaining. And the better you are and the more out there you are, the more they can relax and just lose themselves. And so I haven't, you know, could I think that maybe in the 90s it was a little bit more chaotic, more kind of stage diving and stage invasion and stuff like that. And now everyone's like getting, you know, sort of worried about COVID and sprayed with antiseptic. Here, put these Purell wipes before you go on stage and that kind of shit. And what I used to do, I used to have a lot of people come on stage as the end on the last song, which is really fun. And when I did it recently, because we had a stage that was weirdly, there's no barricade, which is, we've never had no barricade. I was like, oh, well, fuck it. I might as well have them on stage. And they came on stage and I was waiting for this like triumphant moment. And I was like, yeah, we're all in it together. And look around and everyone's fucking filming from on stage. I'm like, no, you meant you're now part of the performance. It's not about you capturing the moment, like you're not there, you're in it. You are the performance. So, so that was a bit, so I was like, all right, I'm not gonna do that shtick anymore. That doesn't work. You know, people filming too much. You know?
Yeah, it's crazy, man. Does Bush have a position about that? Do you try to prevent people from filming the shows?
Oh, no. We just, good luck. Can you imagine trying? Right. Whoa, stop. Everybody's doing it. But you do get the sense that people take themselves out of the moment. You know, you're filming, you're not really present. You're kind of making sure your angle's right and all that stuff.
Right.
So that I'm not a fan of, but, oh, it'd be terrible to be sort of trying to shut down progress and the future. Could everyone stop the future? You know, so I say just make it a good angle. You know, make sure it's good. Don't use it if it sucks. You know, often the mistakes and when things go wrong is that makes the best footage anyway. You know, people like that stuff. You know,
right.
I was on tour last year, 4 months on tour, and one time I had my roadie guitar tech. That's very 90s. My guitar tech was ex-Marine. Right. Ace. And one guy came up in fact, that night where I invited him on stage, one guy came to sing, grab the microphone. And before he could get to the mic, the guy drop kicked him from the side. Like, I don't know why he was so upset. Like, he might sing. I was like, it's okay. It's just a fucking microphone. But he drop kicked him, made the press. And my mom called me. I was like, oh my God. You know, it's like, no one cares about this show or anything like that. But the guy getting drop kicked, that was rad. That was, my mom was like, that's world news.
Was it negative press? Like, you know, a fan was badly assaulted, kind of the terrible thing happened.
Just like that we have Kung Fu Techs, which is kind of cool.
Nice. So I saw something. you were talking about Joe Rogan and Spotify. Mm-hmm. And it sounded like you were heaping praise on Joe Rogan because he's fantastic.
Yep.
But you felt a little bit conflicted about...
Well, there's a sense of irony. You know, like Spotify is the new MTV in that we all make records and then you try and put them on there and you hope like that. And the hope that you get streams and all that stuff. And in the same way that, you know, back in the day, in the 90s, you'd spend like 500,000... It sounds so dumb, but you would, on videos to try and get on TRL and try and make it and be like, you know, please put us on. And so there's sort of a loose irony that Spotify is paying people a lot of money to join them and to bring them over to have the podcasts. And yet the musicians just have to keep giving the product. It's not like, you know, no, you know what I mean? So, and obviously there's a little discrepancy. People, you know, you have to make a lot of streams to get paid. So for young people in music, it must be quite hard to make a good living from streaming. It's really, really not easy.
Right.
So it's just that. I mean, yeah, it's just that. It's like, I don't really care about it. You know, again, it's like that progress thing. You just sort of, for me, my job is to make songs that are good, perform them really well, and try and make people like us. That's it. Right. I concern myself with like Spotify sort of approach to getting podcasts versus how they get better. I don't care really. Mm-hmm. I don't care really. Well, it's interesting. Do you know what I mean? But it's ironic. Do you know what I mean? There's a sense of irony in there. It's built off of the musicians building that platform. That's how they get the money in there. And then they take the money, they give a bit back to the, mostly to the labels, a little bit gets to the artists, and then tons of money goes to signing people, you know, right, who are not musicians.
Right. That's interesting because what I would have thought you'd be saying about Spotify, that artists were upset that they weren't receiving money for all the streams. But you're actually saying you just want to be played on there.
Yeah, well, of course we do. I mean, you want to be out there. It's just all about, at the end of the day, artists, ever since the recording industry began, have been screwed over and over since the beginning of time. You know what I mean? And certain people get superstar deals you talk about. But when you talk about average people making music and getting signed to labels, specifically major labels, you know, it's usually very much in the favor of the labels, of right, course. And so there's always that sense of us against them if you're a lifelong artist like me, you know, versus right, labels. And I know how they, all the stuff they do to artists and free goods and just the bullshit that they do to squeeze money out of them.
Has Bush switched labels?
Yeah, we over the years, we were with Interscope for a long time with all the team over there. And then I did a little time, with BMG a while. So now we have the same label for a while. If you're just consistent enough, and they're pretty good label. They're a very good label. We've had some nice, we're on a hit record. I have a hit record right now. I thought that's why you called me.
Yeah, right, for sure. I wonder too if are there any moves ever to make your own label? Is that something you're interested in?
I did do that back in the day. I signed a band called Souls. I did try that, and we had to buy them off of Warner Brothers and get them on through Interscope. And I was trying to say, what's the best deal we can give them? What's the fairest deal? What's the coolest thing we can do for them? And all the execs are like, fuck is wrong with this guy?
Yeah.
You know, he's not playing the game. But unfortunately, there's a great band. They sound like Jesus Lizard fronted by Bjork. And they were incredible. They were incredible. And then we took them on tour with the Jesus Lizard for like 4 months, and then they decided to break up. They were going to break up, and I found them. I was like, don't break up. Let me take you on tour. You guys are incredible. But it just didn't work out for them. Timing and...
Timing is everything. And I know that probably better than anybody, because just about a half an hour before my lady and I get into bed, that's the time I like to chew up a Blue Chew tablet, maybe even two. And I'll tell you, that makes getting into bed with my lady a whole lot of fun. Why? Because Blue Chew tablets have the same active ingredient as both Viagra and Cialis, but they only cost a fraction of the price. And man, if you've ever wondered if this is a lot of fun, what I'm talking about, I can assure you it is. And I can also assure you that as a listener of the Wild Ride podcast, you can get an entire month's supply of Blue Chew tablets absolutely for free. All you pay is $5 for shipping. Yeah, dude. You just go to bluechew.com. You use the promo code STEVO. You consult with the medical provider online to take care of the prescription. And boom, an entire month's supply is on its way to you. And all you pay is $5 for shipping. And when it gets to you, I can assure you, you're going to have a really good time. So one more time, go to bluechew.com. Use the promo code STEVO for an entire month's supply absolutely for free. Just pay $5 for shipping. Now let's get back to it.
But no, I'm doing other things. I have a clothing label. I'm doing that, Sea of Sound.
And nice.
I've got my Shopify account, and I released a new T-shirt yesterday. So it's been going, I was at my kid's assembly for his graduation. It's going ka-ching, ka-ching, and seeing all the money. It's not a lot. It's like $780 I made this morning. But it was so cool. And I was like, see on my Shopify.
Where can they go? What's the website?
Seaofsound.design.
Seaofsound.design.
Well, Seaofsound is the label.
Now, you say that you do it through Shopify. Does that mean that you're doing your own fulfillment?
Mm-hmm.
So you have a fulfillment center?
I have a manufacturer, yeah, that I'm in, sort of a partner that I'm with, yeah. Is that what you mean? Fulfillment?
Fulfillment meaning
sounds really...
packing, when somebody orders the shirt.
Ah, yes.
Packed into the yes. the mm-hmm. box
yeah.
and shipped and pack. Out.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, as to the warehouse, they have that. The,
yeah.
The, where I get it done, yeah. And they have a whole little, yeah. So an order comes in, they get the t-shirt or they get the whatever, the sweatshirt, and they do it. It's just, we just launched it a little while ago. This is like the second drop. It's too expensive to do the whole thing traditionally. So I've been doing it like these small drops. So that it can just, it's not like throwing money away.
And what is your mechanism for promoting that?
Well, so far lacking.
Lacking.
Lacking, could do better. So I do it on my Instagram and I have Sea of Sound. I got on my Sea of Sound site and on my Gavin Rossdale site. And that's about it. And so I just got a company in who marketing apparently told me that we got everything wrong with meta data and how to speak and how to get to Google Analytics, that stuff.
Right.
So I'm getting schooled in that stuff and having to redo everything, including names, tagging, all that sort of stuff. That was like, we're artists, we want to write what we want, you know?
Right.
It's a bearskin t-shirt. Isn't that enough? They go, no, not enough. Need
a
more.
Bearskin t-shirt.
No, I don't know. I'm just giving an example. I'm just saying that when I want to say something as I would say it, they keep saying, don't forget to put in the keywords, you know?
So does Bush own the rights to like Bush merch?
Yeah.
So you guys,
so.
Do some record labels own the name sometimes and that's how they get money, or is it all part of the negotiation?
I think that's when 360 deals have that, but we don't do 360 deals, so we do it ourselves. And we had a great run this last tour. I really like it, you know. I like cool stuff, and I think that clothes are a real good way of make yourself feel, you know, powerful and take on the day. And I think it's a really important mm-hmm. quality. You know, it's not vanity, it's just sort of armor. And so I love getting into, I've always done our merch and
you do the merch?
Mm-hmm, design it.
That's cool.
It's really basic, as in how many ways can you write Bush? You know what I mean? This way, that way. But I just do, yeah, it's cool. I have fun doing it and I love it. And what I also really like, which I nicked from Sepultura, is all our crew they get whatever merch they want. So at any festival, anything like that, there's always like 15, 20 people, cool looking, like tattered up dudes all in the Bush thing. And it just feels like a tribe, like an army.
That's cool.
And I like that. So it also helps you when you have so many people on stage, you know, who are like, this guitar's too loud, where do I look? You know, so look for someone in a Bush shirt.
I like that.
So it's helpful.
Do you guys travel on tour bus? Do you guys take mm-hmm. planes, or do you guys...
Tour bus.
Always tour bus.
Yeah, planes suck. I mean, look, I'm not against... maybe after this podcast, I'm going to get to the private jets that I want. You know, that's what I'm expecting. That's why I agreed.
Yeah.
I looked at the numbers here, 1.6 million. I figured, you know what? Could be closer to a private jet. And but otherwise, up until then, that's all Southwest. I don't really like flying. Buses are the best. You get on that bus.
Thank the Lord for tour buses.
Oh, yeah. How many buses do you guys caravan with? One, two,
one, three tour buses, and a truck, probably.
For the merch?
Yeah, and for the gear.
The gear, of course.
Yeah. Guitars, boring, stuff like that.
Yeah.
The old guitars, yeah. So yeah, we're kind of a lean, mean machine.
So, cool. You are... In incredibly youthful shape, right? I mean, like, how do you stay so damn healthy?
I like to sweat, and I like that feeling that you get. I just had to work out this morning. I work out a lot in a sweatsuit. You know, I do everything in a sweatsuit, like the cut weight stuff. And I'm really active on stage, and I just think that I've always been, I'm like an art jock, you know what I mean? So my whole life, I grew up playing soccer, really was pretty good at soccer. And I love tennis and healthy things like that. And then I love kind of staying up and having fun, like with art projects.
Right.
So I kind of do it both. I'm not like, Yeah. So I've always, I think it just makes you feel better, right? I mean, just to be fitter and stuff like that, just feel good.
Yeah.
What's your diet like?
Indulgent. You know, really indulgent and just sort of balanced. I mean, just pretty indulgent, as in that I just live, you know, I'm like fully aware that if I eat shitty for 5 days straight, you know, I'm going to have, you know, I'm going to be like regretting it. So as soon as I eat shitty, I eat good, I eat cleaner. I like to cook. That helps because I cook quite clean. So
how come British people have a better way of saying shit than Americans? Like, what's your diet like? Indulgent. I'm like, what's indulgent mean? You know, like,
it means I go for it. You know what I mean? I cook in butter and I'm very basic. You know, it's just try and get, eat organically. I went through a whole, I dated a vegan. I know that you were, I know that you're a pescatarian now, right?
Pescatarian now, yeah.
So I did, you know, a lot of, I, you know, a lot of, I was well into that whole vegan lifestyle. But I found it quite difficult for how to sustain me. I didn't feel that healthy off of it. But I'm very, you know, I care about sort of how animals are treated, reared, raised, dispatched, all that stuff. I just, you know, and I feel sort of horrible at it. And I always think that the vegans, not the militant ones, but the kind of regular vegans, and I've a lot of friends who are vegans, you know, have the moral high ground that I can't really... I can't hang with, you know, because really we should try and avoid eating meat.
Right. I think that above all else, factory farming is particularly upsetting.
You know, it's so wild. Don't you think it's now this time? It's such an incredible time because we've now seen that industrial revolution was a disaster. It used to be seen because no one ever considered animals as sentient beings, you know, so just sort of seen as like factually, how can we feed all these people? And so what happens, the Industrial Revolution has destroyed everything, is destroying everything. The rainforest still, I was reading this morning, like, what was that? I was reading, 30 million trees in 6 years. It's just insane amounts of, it's in the Guardian newspaper today. I was reading it like, oh my God. So it really is about the responsibility of farming. And it's a difficult one, you know, and now you get all this thing about how kale and spinach have oxalates and, you know, it's sort of defense chemicals that are really not good for us. And so when people get sort of they're all bloated and feel shitty. It's like that kale salad isn't good for you. So he's like, what do you eat? What are you meant to eat? I was like, used to be that my favorite vegetable. I'd be like, I'm going to have that all the time and stuff like that. And now you're finding out that it's maybe these things aren't so good to eat.
CMOS.
I did hear that spinach contributes to kidney stones.
Yeah, right. And I did that crazy DNA thing where you find out what's going to happen to you the rest of your life.
Where you can find out if you're going to get Alzheimer's or not.
Everything, yeah. Any single ailment.
Wow.
Yeah, and people don't want to do it because they find out they're going to say, no, I'm not going to, you know, I have the Alzheimer's gene. So I don't have the Alzheimer's gene and I don't have the diabetic gene, but I do have the gene for high kidney failure. I was like, whoa, what's up with that? My kidneys are fine.
Wow.
The doctor's like, well, yeah, but it could just happen anytime. So I'm in the high 85 percentile for like terrible kidney stuff. So I used to love spinach. So since I found out about spinach, because I just read that, I was like, am I not allowed to eat spinach now?
Right.
So, salt's a big one for the kidneys, right?
Oh, you didn't. Really?
I just said it. I'm sorry.
Now I know it's going to be there. Salt's great, right?
Well,
salt's
yeah.
rad. It's flavor.
Not table salt, but you can do other types of salt that's
like
lava rock salt or
Himalayan salt.
Okay. I wonder. Okay. So where do you go to get this DNA test?
Oh, just this Dr. Stanford, this guy. In fact, my record producer, one guy I worked with, done a couple of records with, Tyler Bates. Do you know Tyler Bates?
I don't.
He's the most amazing composer, film composer, and songwriter. I've done like loads of songs with him. Three songs on this record I wrote with him. And anyway, he turned me on to this doctor. And I was like, some people don't want to do that, want to find out, you know, want to live in ignorance. And I just go, no, I want to head this off. Because it could have been really bad. I had a friend of mine whose sister found out that she had the Alzheimer's gene. It's just, so she's like, oh my God. And luckily, I told his doctor that. He said, well, so do I, so send her in to me. So she went in to see him, and he kind of educated her. It doesn't, you know, even in the high percentile, it doesn't mean that you're going to actually get it. It just means you have a high propensity.
Yeah, I don't have the gene, and my grandpa died of early onset Alzheimer's, but just because I don't have the gene doesn't mean I can't get it either.
Right.
There's like a 9% chance that I can, versus if I did have the gene, I'd have like an 80% chance or whatever it was.
Really?
So,
last two bits of info I didn't like.
Yeah. My buddy Tony. My buddy Tony Hawk told me about that test for the Alzheimer's gene, and that if you have the Alzheimer's gene, you're at a considerably higher risk for developing the CTE from concussions.
Really?
Yeah. And I remember chewing on that, you know, and thinking, shit, do I want to get this test? But like, what, you know, you can't unhit your head.
Definitely that's difficult to unhit your head. Yeah, you can stop hitting your head.
Right.
That's a good one. Yeah.
Tony said that he didn't have the Alzheimer's gene, but then I called him back a while later and said, well, hey, Tony, what was your plan if you did have the Alzheimer's gene? He said, oh, I don't know. You know, so it does become a consideration. Do you want the answer to a question
that you can't fix?
But you can fix it. There's
if God is omnipotent, can he make himself a breakfast that's too big to eat? Is it that kind of thing?
Wow, that was deep. It caught me off guard, and I don't even know what to do with it. But you know what? I've lived in my house for almost an entire decade, and I'm just thinking about how to celebrate that. You know how I celebrated moving in? I got myself squatty potty for every single toilet in the house. And for the last almost 10 years, I've taken every single dump with my feet perched on that squatty potty. Now, if you don't know about this, then this is big time important, because by raising your feet when you take a dump, you simulate the position of crouching, which is how our bodies were actually intended to take a dump. We weren't supposed to sit on something. We're supposed to crouch in the woods. And our intestines and our whole body is lined up like that, so that you really have to be crouching if you want to take a perfect, healthy, and complete dump. That's why squatty potty is so crucial. And you can get 20% off your squatty potty if you go to squattypotty.com/stevo. Once again, that's squattypotty.com/stevo. And I can't tell you how important this is, because by not pooping in the right position, you are taking on health risks, okay? And I want you to be healthy, and I want you to take full, complete dumps. So go to squattypotty.com/stevo for 20% off your order. Now let's get back to it.
No, I just saw somewhere that they're starting to call Alzheimer's type 3 diabetes, and it can help if you reduce your sugar intake.
Of course, that's
it. I think it's like wheat,
that's what I was going to say, that you would tailor your life so that you'd know that literally you just... it maybe improves your focus and being healthy, and inspires you to live a cleaner life, you know? I don't know.
Yeah, sugar is gnarly, man.
It's so good.
Andrew Huberman said that, like, nicotine is bad for you to inhale, but it's good for your brain to protect you from Alzheimer's and Parkinson's.
I don't think nicotine is bad for you. It's all of the stuff that comes with the tobacco, the tar,
nicotine is not bad.
So the idea is that you basically start smoking at 65. You start like just French. You go straight French. You go to Paris.
It protects you.
Yeah.
I mean, somebody made a point that you see old people smoking cigarettes all the time. You know, it's like old people
Europe? Or everywhere?
Yeah, wherever. But you never see like really old, super obese people.
Yeah.
True that.
Your waistline is your lifeline.
Is it?
I read that. The bigger your waistline, the shorter your lifespan. Wow. Okay. The shorter your waistspan, the longer your lifespan.
Hmm. Wow.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Yeah.
All right, I want to switch gears. The first song you ever wrote was Glycerine.
was the first time I wrote
Come Down.
Ah, okay.
Come Down.
Glycerine I wrote a few weeks later because I just, then I got on a roll. Then I sort of like, okay, so okay, it's not like that. You know, I could be a busker.
But how are you?
Four chords.
How are you worried you're not, like, when you do that and your first hits, your first thing you wrote as a hit, were you worried about being a one-hit wonder? Or when you're on a roll like that, you don't even think about it?
At that point, I was like, living my life, like living in an apartment with five people, a painting job, painting houses, and just thinking, just let me make a fucking record already. Like, this is embarrassing. I told everyone I'm a singer and I can't even get arrested. So my only, my threshold was really low. We used to go out to nightclubs, clubs, and go out and be like, you know, look at that guy. He's got a deal. Fuck, he's got a deal. How'd he get a deal? You know, and then you'd see someone from a label, be like, oh my God, there's fuckface from, like, you know, from record labels. Just please, you could change my life. Please change my life. But they didn't change my life, you know? And so I got to make 16 Stone, and which is that record Come Down is on. And then after that, the story is that we lost the distribution. So I did that record, I completed it. It's Come Down, Glycerine, Everything's Zen, all that record. And they took it to the label, that we were at Hollywood Records at the time, and they threw the record physically at the guy from my small independent label and said, not only are there no singles on this record, there's no album tracks. And we got dropped from Hollywood Records, which is from Disney, which mm-hmm. is kind of a slap in the face, but a welcome slap in the face, because I didn't want to be in there in the first place. I was like, you know, I want right. to be cool. I was like, you're on Disney Records, on Hollywood Records? This isn't so cool. And they chucked us off because Frank Wells, who signed us, had got killed in a helicopter crash. And that's what's weird about life, is that you learn so much. I went back to work. I painted 12 dentist offices in the West End of London, and magnolia, actually not dissimilar to that color, magnolia, it's like a peachy, it's like white that you don't have to wash for 10 years. It's a very cheap dentist office color. And I did those song, those apartment, there's a big offices, 10, 11 of them, I think. And in the middle of that, and I was like, well, I made the record, so I didn't have any, wasn't a hit at all. And then they said to me, oh, K-Rock's playing your record. Everything Zen is on K-Rock. You got to come back to America. You got to meet this company. You got to meet Ted Field, Jimmy Iovine. And I was like, what's K-Rock? And I thought I was signed. I was like so dumb and confused. And I came to America, LA. I stayed here. We can see it. The Hilton Hotel. First hotel I ever got paid to stay in.
And Universal.
As a musician. Yeah, Universal. I made people I knew come out to see me. I'm like, I made a hotel. I got a room paid for my music. You got to come see it. It's like a room at the Hilton. But it's the greatest thing ever. And so that's how that began. And so Everything Zen was a hit. Then Little Things was a hit. Then Come Down was a hit. Then Glycerine was a hit. So it was like, I was already, by when Come Down came out, I'd already had three, so I was about to be a four-hit wonder.
Well, question. The guy who kicked you off the Hollywood Records, sorry, sack of shit.
Well, in a Buddhist way, I'm grateful, right? Because I then went to Ted Field, took me to Interscope, and then I had the muscle of Interscope. And had I gone to Hollywood Records, I'd have, who knows? I may not have made it to this podcast.
Right.
I may have just been an air one, wishing I could afford the coffees. Mm-hmm. And just going like, you know, instead it's just, I mean, life is all about these like weird confluences of things.
For sure.
Right.
Like, I don't believe in much, but I believe in the energy universe works in a weird way to bring people together and you get that synchronicity. That's sure. what I, you know, I'm, you know, the whole, you know, karma and God and all mm-hmm. those things, people, they're not so much for me. I'm sort of like on earth, on my feet, on the ground, and feel responsible for what I should do and my actions, you know?
Yeah.
And, but I do believe that you find yourself where you should be at all times, no matter how horrible those times are. I do believe that that's your destiny of where you should be. So the fact that I got dropped by a label I didn't want to be on was perfect. It was a bit harsh because I was like, I told everyone that I was going to be successful, and then there I was painting, but come and see me at work, you know, covered in paint at the pub, you know.
Yeah,
it's gonna be great. I'm gonna be massive.
Yeah, but hindsight's 2020. So were you really feeling that way when you did get dropped, or were you like, oh fuck it, something else will come up better? Did you always have that attitude?
To be honest, to be truthful, I was so used to failing and so used to no that I was like, oh, okay, how are we going to deal with this? No, life wasn't about, you know, when you're young and as dumb as that and just like full of energy, You just, a no just means that, well, you got to go around it. Okay, I got to go around it. I didn't stop. I got no from everyone. I was signed to a label in the Valley when I was in London. So I got told no like every single day. Worse than no, nothing. You know, I could get demo time. You're going to do three songs and you just wait, and then they wouldn't tell you anything. So they wouldn't say, this is why, this is what is done wrong. They just wouldn't say anything. Just get ghosted. That's the beginning of ghosting. My first ghosting.
I'm pretty sure ghosting's always been a thing.
You know, it's just so brutal, you know, especially if, now I think of it, being, you know, early 20s, you could just benefit from someone at the label saying, hey, these are the three things, reasons why we didn't sign you, go work on those things. But they literally had no belief in me whatsoever. I didn't feel the need to even tell me the simplest of things, you know.
What was your dad's definition of no?
A request for further information.
I love that.
That's so good.
Yeah.
I'm surprised you guys never, I mean, from London, and Steve's from London, you guys are both.
I know. I feel bad. But we should.
We're heading out there in a couple weeks.
Oh, yeah.
With the Hackney Theater.
Yeah, I've got a UK tour coming up.
You have?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. How's that going?
It's spectacular. It's going spectacularly well, and I'm taping my next special in London at the Hackney Empire.
When? What date?
This July. Is going to be on July 14th, yeah. And I'm itching to add a show on the 13th, so I can have three shows to tape.
Yeah.
So
that's awesome. How do you, like? I was watching. I love stand up, so I watch it all the time. And I watched Jerry yesterday. I want to watch The Clean. One of Jerry Seinfeld.
Okay.
You know, it's just amazing. Just that ability. Because I mean, I love Louis C.K. Obviously, you know, Bill Burr is my total hero of all time.
Jim Jefferies.
Yeah, incredible. Cunt. Yeah. He's amazing, yeah. So I love it. But I was intrigued about it. Like, so you have to do so much work to get that amount of material together, and then does that sort of, when you're up there, must be kind of, I mean, I go up on stage and I talk for a bit, and some nights I'm on it. Some nights I'm just loose and, you know, say stupid stuff like, you know, I just hate it when people say songs are their babies. It's so dumb. They're not songs. They're not babies. They're songs, you know?
Right.
So you have these thoughts. But as a stand-up comedian, you have to have... But in other nights, I'll be like, oh, I can't be bothered standing. Just play another song. But for you, as a stand-up comedian, you got to be like that flow, that easy delivery, you know, difficult audiences. I mean, how do you deal with hecklers, for example?
Oh, God, I'm terrible with hecklers, man. I'm notoriously terrible with hecklers because...
You got to get your shtick going on that. You got to be, you know?
Yeah.
Jimmy Carr.
Oh my God, now Jimmy Carr, he's my favorite. He is insane.
You know what's really insane? The way that humans have been destroying the world with plastic. And that is why I am so loyal to Liquid Death. Because it comes in infinitely recyclable aluminum cans. And they look like beers, but it's just water. Unless you get the Liquid Death tea, the new teas. Man, so awesome. Armless Palmer, Grim Leafer, and Rest in Peach. I mean, come on. And if you get the iced teas on Amazon, free shipping, as well as a bunch of retailers in your area. Yeah, man. Plus, listeners of the Wild Ride podcast, they get 20% off their first purchase of apparel at liquiddeath.com. If you go to liquiddeath.com/Stevo, that's liquiddeath.com/Stevo. 20% off the apparel. Check it out. This stuff is epic. And man, drinking water is actually really good for you too. I've been drinking a lot more water. Been stretching in the mornings. I'm doing everything right. I feel good, and I feel really good about Liquid Death. So go to liquiddeath.com/Stevo. Get that apparel. Drink the water. Drink the tea. Feel good about yourself and save the world. Now let's get back to it.
Is that your mom? Yeah.
Come back.
I just feel that heckling is vandalism to the show.
Of course it is.
It's just, you know, and the idea that all of these people have come out, they've spent their hard-earned money, here they are to enjoy the show, and then you got somebody, a couple people are going to vandalize it for them. It's just so disrespectful to me. And
so what do you say to them?
Yeah, I mean, it depends.
Varies on night to night.
It varies on night to night, but
usually it's shut the fuck up and stop being a fucking asshole.
Oh, the subtle punch.
Yeah. The witty.
Depends what part of the sledgehammer. Yeah.
Very nuanced. Yeah.
do musicians get hecklers? I mean, what's a heckler for you? Somebody holding up a fucking sign. I mean,
you kind of want people screaming at
yeah, like, you know, no, there's no. I mean, the only heckling that we have a different version of it. That's when I go along. You got 15,000 people, but why do we always? I get, and there's one guy yawning at the front. I'm like, God, fuck, and then I'm mad at him. You know, someone's not enjoying it.
Right.
It's so stupid because you've got like 14,999 people that are losing their minds. You got one fuckhead in the front who's like wishing that the next band comes on. You're like, we're all friends and we're good. They're not on stage right now. Let it go, you know. And right. So that I always find of, I had it the other day going in the crowd. I love going in the crowd. I love that. People just don't expect it. And every show I say, I'm not going to do it. I've been doing it forever. It's bullshit. Don't make it a shtick in your life. Every night, boom, let's go out. It's fucking great. And to go out, and the other night, there was
when
like...
When you say go out in the crowd, do you mean
go
like...
Go to the back of the arena. Go into the crowd.
Like, I mean, all the way, crowd jump surfing?
Off. Well, yeah, I can jump off the stage, go through the crowd, go to the side, go around, go up the rafters, all the way. I love that.
I mean, how do people not just assault you?
Because they're just losing their shit. They're having so much... They love it. They know because it's like... For that moment, I am... part of their wildest fantasy of the night. You know what I mean?
So, nobody's trying to hit you in the nuts or something? Or some drunk asshole?
I do get grabbed and then a couple of times grabbed in the nuts. I'm like, not now. This is not, you know what I mean? I'm sweating on stage. This is not a fair representation of who I am.
Right. And, yeah. And
it's cold.
Someone will always come away with a shoe.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
But so I like going to do that. And the other night there was someone who was like, you know, because we played with... you know, we were out with Alice in Chains, so maybe want to see Alice in Chains more than they want to see Bush, you know, but I just love going to the crowd and fucking singing right out like that, and it's just like, because you just break people's, you know, frosty, and they get into it. Mostly, 99% of people are just so excited and trying to get me and doing pictures and doing all that and grabbing and pulling, and yeah. and it's chaos, but it's not aggressive, like, it's not... hate breed or you know, right. there's bears. It's not like I don't hate those mosh pits, the big circles, they're running in bashing each other, real hardcore bands getting there. I'm always like, this is like the dumbest, why are you going to come out and like wrestle with each other?
Right.
What's up with that? Psychologically it doesn't make sense to me, but so, and I don't like people who don't want to be involved in that getting like beaten up, because that also sucks, like,
right.
You know what I mean, that's real vandalism, you know, you're watching a show and you got people smacking into you, and there's always that happens, and there's fights break out, and but generally I just love doing it, because it just, I don't know what it's like for you as a performer, but I'm always looking at ways to be as wild and as brilliant as possible and dynamic. So it's from lying down on the floor, you know, on the stage like a dead body, to being at the back of the arena sort of like that, singing with someone and everything in between, because it's your responsibility to be as entertaining as possible from the minute you're on to the minute you're off, or else what are you doing? That's your job.
Yeah.
So I just try and be as dynamic as possible, and jumping off the stage and going into the crowd is just always a sure way. And it just, the whole atmosphere, the whole place loses their mind, because you just create chaos. But I don't, it's not aggressive chaos. It's sort of, it's just celebratory and sort of tribal. Yeah. It's tribal. Everyone just wants a part of that moment. And it's just, it's beautiful.
Yeah. My favorite question to ask bands and musician is, when you guys were traveling international, did you have a favorite place that you smuggled drugs? Like, where would Bush put their drugs when they go flying from place to place?
Oh, that would be, I once had an incredible guitar tech. It was very, very considerate. But generally, it's just all about it's, well, nowadays you sort of,
like, weed's legal now.
Weed's, yeah. Before that, it was just all about, you know, inside, you know, the sort of like the fake jars of coffee or the peanut, you know, that, and then the peanut butter on top, and just all the things you would do to try and to hide. But, you know, the other good news of being in bands is that there's always people around
that have
it's not really.
Yeah.
I mean, it's that thing, you know, going to Canada and you have to, like, you have this weed, you'd be like, see ya. You let go of it. You're going to Canada and somebody's like, hey, I'll get some weed. Like, it's like, oh, okay. But it's right.
Vinny's favorite place to put drugs.
I knew that was coming. I knew it was coming.
The old prison pocket.
The good old prison pocket.
Oh, the prison pocket. Yep. Okay, okay. Yeah. Swallow the condom.
Oh, you're familiar with the prison pocket, eh?
The swallow, just insert.
Yeah.
Before he went to jail, he didn't
want to go to jail for it.
Yeah. I didn't go to jail for it. I was going to jail and I had a really bad heroin habit at the time.
Oh.
So when I turned myself in.
That's cool.
When I turned myself in, I put a lot of stuff up my butt.
So. Really? Like, did you, like...
I put a lot of stuff up my butt.
Because would you be super considerate, like, okay, so I'm going to be here for what? How long are you inside for?
Like 6 months.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, but I brought...
Do you think 6 months up there? Damn.
No. I went through all my shit really soon.
Wow.
But, like, I had enough to last me, like, a week or two, you know? But I knew I was eventually going to be sick. So I just...
And you didn't get more inside?
No, not really.
And you did cold turkey inside?
Pretty much. I like tried to get on the methadone program there, but it was like the waiting list and trying to talk to a doctor is insane. And
really?
Yeah.
I was addicted to Xanax.
Oh, yeah. I brought a lot of Xanax up there, too.
4 years or something like that. When I was just working a lot internationally, and I was traveling, and I was like, oh, look, if I take this,
airplanes,
I'm going to go to sleep.
So
I'm going to go to sleep for 8 hours. Mm-hmm. And I got into this habit, and then suddenly before I knew it, I was done like 3-4 years. I just couldn't even think of sleeping without Xanax. And so I then decided I should stop. And I just stopped. And I did 2 weeks where every night I was like, it's like I'd been in a shower and then I got into bed. You know, like as wet as I could be, and then lie in bed, and I just sweats for 2 weeks. And people told me afterwards it's super dangerous.
Yeah,
I didn't try
benzos
at all.
And alcohol are
I
like
didn't,
the most
I just
dangerous.
Stopped dead.
Yeah.
Oh, stop. You know.
Yeah.
Do you get dizzy when you quit Xanax, or is it just what was the withdrawal?
I was
like?
Lying awake at night, like, oh fuck. But I knew that I really kind of crossed the line of my fun. Times out, you know, weed and sort of fun drugs, but you know, smack, you know, where I grew up, sort of this you know what I mean, there's like there's party side and there's naughty you know what I mean, it's like there's a whole different endeavor, it's a different pastime. Because you know, I was always so ambitious, it was like I couldn't, everyone, all of my friends who did heroin, just that's what they did. And I wanted to be in a band that wanted to be stoned and in a band, you know, or do the band thing and then be wasted at the end of it. So I was always had this focus, and but it was pretty scary that I just was like, wow, what have you done to your body? That for 2 weeks, straight up 14 days, not much sleep and just pure sweating. And, you know, then I was down to 161, which is small for me, you know, because I'm like heavier than that, 85 or 190. So that was pretty hardcore. And of course, any doctor give them to you. So there was no need to smuggle those. The things that were worse for me my whole life, I was just getting them from regular doctors.
What years were, how old were you during that time?
I was about 3 weeks ago.
Yesterday.
Not long ago, 6 years ago. Yeah,
6 years ago.
Yeah.
And so you've been
through
able
a tricky
to,
time in my life.
You've been able to not do Xanax since then?
You know, I had a most amazing moment. It's a willful name drop because it's fun for the program, but I had an incredible moment. Mastodon is one of my favorite bands.
Okay.
Right? I love that band. And we were playing Rock M Ring last year, and there's Fever 333, Deftones, Bush, Mastodon. We're all on the same stage, actually at the same time, because I was the day after Mastodon, but I went to watch them because I was a huge fan of it. And Brent, I didn't know, they're so heavy that I didn't know if they'd like, I don't know, you know, sometimes when you see heavy bands, you're like, are they going to be friendly? They're going to be like, what's it going to be like?
Super friendly.
We had a friend, we had a mutual friend, we'd done Rascal Linux, done a record with him. So I was always like, oh, the folklore of Mastodon. And they were super friendly. And I went over to them and we took pictures with them. And I just met Brent really quickly. And I was like, he's asked me how I was doing. I had been having trouble with my voice and I wasn't feeling good. And I was like, when I'm in Europe, fuck it, I'm just going to take Xanax and I'm just going to fucking go back to my Xanax. I had my little pill bottle with me and I was like, I'll stop in a month when I finish the tour. I just got to get to this tour, my voice. So I was telling all myself the reasons why I should take the Xanax. Because, you know, because the first couple of days you're super jet lagged and, you know, you're playing shows and you feel shit. And I said to him, I'm doing all right. And I rattled this thing in my pocket, but I said, but I think that I shouldn't probably do it, right? I think I'm going to go back on this train. And he goes, don't. Yeah, he go.
Well, how did you get from
meeting
him? Well, no, how did you get from not taking Xanax to having them in your pocket?
Oh, because I'd flown over with them. So the one time I will take them is on a transatlantic flight.
Oh,
I'll
gotcha,
pop one okay. just to sleep the night. And then I was like, that's it. Then you get there and then I thought, so I had them on me and I was had a few rough days and I was like, should I or shouldn't I? And I, again, this whole thing about this synchronicity and, you know, meeting people. I met him and I said to him, yeah, I'm feeling my voice. I don't feel good in my voice and I don't feel very healthy. And I'm being an idiot, but I really might think I might just spend a month, you know, doing shows and eating Xanax so I can get through this. And he then went on to tell me about his journey with it, how he was addicted to it for way longer, of course, you know, way heavier than me, way longer than me on Xanax. And he was telling me about how actually it makes you, like everything slows down to the point of close to death. Everything slows down, all your organs, everything completely. That's what it is. Everything slows down.
Xanax does
yeah.
that?
He's the benzos, that's what they do. So I was like, I just hugged him. You know what I mean? I hugged him and I was like, you just saved me because your wisdom and insight and experience just made me not do that. So I kept the pills, obviously. Not out there.
I'm not an idiot.
I'm not an idiot or an angel, but I didn't take him.
That's great. You ever tour with Smashing Pumpkins?
I've done a few shows with them, and we should tour more. Billy is amazing, and they have a new record out. And we did a few shows with them in Portugal, a couple of festivals. We fit so well together, but we haven't got it yet. He just did Jane's Addiction now. I think it was the Interpol, and we should tour together. It's such a great complementary bands. They really work well together, so maybe. We'll see.
Yeah, Jane's Addiction, man. Yeah.
Did you ever tour Sublime in the 90s?
No, but I did so many shows around, you know, festivals and stuff with them. And there was talk, they contacted me recently about touring with Sublime in Rome a little while ago because we had the same tour manager, but that never came about.
Yeah.
How are they doing? Do you like them?
I like them. I'm fascinated with them in the 90s, though.
Right.
I really dug the shit out of them.
Right.
When you have a hit like Glycerin, and you said that it was about a girl named Susie. I think you said that on the Howard Stern show.
Yeah.
You had a girlfriend that you wrote the song about.
Right.
Whatever her name was.
Maybe. I was dying to ask this question.
but my question might be different than yours, but
there is a Susie, but I'm not sure if the song that song's about. I don't know.
Whoever the song was about.
Yeah.
When that person finds out that there's a hit song about them, like, are they like, dude, what the fuck? Or like, give me some money at least. Or like, what's the protocol there? Because I'm sure you weren't expecting that song to just go apeshit. It's a true story about some girl where she's probably like,
yeah. I mean, the thing about it is that lots of songs for me, they can be sort of patchwork of people and what people made you feel in that situation. The idea, I don't follow that sort of Springsteen storyline, faithful to the narrator, faithful to the story. I'm like the Ginsberg school of chaos and firework words and firework ideas and songs to be as fragmented as we are in the day, as this conversation is. Do you know what I mean? It's like, mm-hmm. I just can't imagine, you know, just bashing home one point, one person, one situation. And so I just look for the best line. And so therefore some songs can be kind of, you know, kind of composites of different situations. And so, yeah, that was Susie, but there's also like my first girlfriend, you know, just they destroy you, you know, yeah. girls destroy you. You know, so it's like I could just. I've got like a drawer full of issues with all the girls I've ever dated. Just what they've done to me. Like, oh, that'll fit. Yeah.
You're a love addict.
Fucker.
Yeah, you and me both.
Well, you know.
Love yeah. addiction makes for great songwriting.
I believe in love. And I just listening to an amazing lecture by Alan de Botton, Reasons Why You Will Marry the Wrong Person. Yeah. Just genius.
Wow.
That's heavy. Yeah.
So we were operating on the assumption that Glycerin it was about a girl named Susie. Maybe not just one girl, but maybe...
Susies.
Yeah, a bunch of girls.
All Susies in general.
And then we understand that Glycerin is actually like some kind of an explosive. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So we wanted to ask, is the song about Susie just having bomb-ass pussy?
Well, no.
Sex was not.
No. Let me think about that. No.
Because the crazier they are, the better the sex tends to be.
Yeah. The crazy hot matrix. Yeah.
Pussy was bomb.
Imagine how big the song would have been if I had told everyone that.
Yeah. Everybody would have related.
I could have had that private jet after all.
Uh-huh. Yeah. That's even waiting to ask them.
Dying. Yeah, man. So I'm interested. That's just kind of 15,000. That's an arena. Mm-hmm. So Bush is an arena act. An arena act in the 90s. Has it just been 15,000?
No, not at all. No. And there's many times we'll go somewhere and it's 5,000 or 3,000. And just so, no, it's a range of it all. But we've been on a roll since a couple of records, since the pandemic. We brought out The Kingdom. We had a record called The Kingdom, which did really good, even though it was in the pandemic. And then we followed up with The Art of Survival. And I went super heavy, you know, because I think at this point in my career, you're expected to sort of not phone in records, but just do records that don't really matter as much as what you did when you were vital. And I just hate that idea. I just think that we get wiser as we get older. We should get better at our crafts that we do. And so I like to debunk that idea and try to write the best songs that I've ever done. I mean, I'm proud of you know, there's a few turkeys here and there over the years and a few approaches to sounds that I think didn't work, but we just always try to make rock interesting. I've been around so long and so long when people are like, rock is dead. It's like, yeah, it is, until you play 60,000 people in Ohio at incarceration, you know, like we're going to go do. So there's a real disconnect. It's not part of the mainstream culture in the way hip hop is and pop is, you know, and I wish it was, you know, I wish I had that audience, but it's just going to take a number of bands making the right records, and there's some young bands making some great records that I hope give people the kind of confidence to fall in love again with rock. But also it is counterculture, right? I mean, like, I grew up loving like punk, and so punk bands were never arena bands,
right?
No punk bands an arena mm-hmm. band.
What kind of punk bands were?
Oh, well, I was lucky enough to sort of, you know, it's like the original English punk bands, you know, from X-Ray Specs, Zillow's, Clash, the Clash, Sex Pistols, on into Public Image, on into Gang of Four. We were spoiled, you know, we are spoiled with all that legacy. So that's why the new pop punk for me is not as fun for me, but I have a 15-year-old kid, he loves it, you know, loves mm-hmm. that sound. It's because it's for him. You know, I'm always like, do you want to hear the Sex Pistols?
Nice. You know?
Who are you listening to?
Oh, man.
Dayglo Abortions?
Dayglo Abortions, I really did enjoy.
Dayglo Abortions?
Yeah, they're this great band from British Columbia.
Wow.
Yeah. SNFU, of course, Misfits.
Right.
Sam Hain.
So this is the American scene. You know, what about Black Flag?
Black Flag, big time. Yeah, mm-hmm. I loved all that.
What were you listening
to? I liked the Sex Pistols, too.
What were you listening to when you were living in the UK?
I mean, which time? You know, like
in high school.
In high school, God, I went through a range, man. I was at the beginning of high school. It was all about the Misfits, 7 Seconds. Then I got into like the straight edge hardcore, like all the New York hardcore bands, Gorilla Biscuits,
Fugazi,
Minor Threat, Youth of Today. And then all of a sudden I just turned into a pothead, and it was all the Grateful Dead. And
so the Motley Crue was your first time in London.
Yeah. Mm. Love Motley Crue.
Twisted Sister.
Yep. That was my first concert, was Twisted Sister at Hammersmith Odeon.
Really?
Yeah.
He was scary, wasn't he? D. Schneider.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah. I love Tommy. I didn't grow up with, I know this great resurgence with Motley Crue.
Man, they're big now.
There's the stadiums.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's incredible.
It's insane.
He deserves it. He's a great rock star.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. They're out in Europe right now.
Yeah, I follow Tommy. So I see, it's incredible. I'm so happy for him.
Yeah.
Yeah, dude. So you got a Bush tour.
We have 6 weeks off now. I'm actually going to England next week, see my family and stuff, and take my boys, and then we're doing Weekend Warrior stuff, which is really what I want to do. Every summer for the past so many summers I'm always away, and this time we're home, but we're playing every weekend. All these festivals, nice.
Yeah.
So you just fly dates, no bus, just all fly dates, flying up, and then you park up, you just plug in and play for an hour, and against all the other bands, and say hello to some people, try to blow everyone off stage, and just go about your business and get on a plane and go to the next one, and then come home. It's like three days a week. It's cool.
So Donington, is that one of them?
Yeah, I played that last year.
Yeah, it's great.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, dude. So do we have tour dates to promote
Yeah, there's loads. Yeah, there's quite a few. There's
tour dates. And where do we send people to?
To Bush Official or Bush Online. Instagram is easy, Bush, or under my name, and that's it. Or Bush Official Online. And it's all there, all that information.
They're promoting the album.
Yeah.
You want to hold that album up?
Do you have a preferred way that you like people to stream your album? Doesn't matter.
In its entirety. The whole damn thing.
Yeah. That's a good answer.
That's good. But Spotify,
Apple.
Did you see that meme that's going around? Not meme, but whatever you call it, a little clip about a guy in England. He's so English, as you got that English blood in you. And he goes, do you want any food yet? He goes, what are the choices? She goes, yes or fucking no.
That's great.
My favorite one was when the stewardess asked the guy if he wanted headphones. And he's like, how'd you know my name was Phones?
He got laid on a
British Airways flight.
On a British Airways flight.
On the way to the UK.
From LA to London.
Mm-hmm. In the seat.
And it absolutely...
Context, what, go on.
He never met this...
We sat next to each other, and we were having sex within 2 hours.
And she was smoking.
She was on the plane.
So awesome. Why do you wait so long to tell the story?
We've
been here for hours.
I know.
He's a mile high.
I don't know.
How did that happen? What do you mean? You sit down. Walk me through it. You're drinking, obviously.
No.
You weren't drinking?
No.
Okay. What are you, some kind of magician? What are you?
No, I don't know. We got along really well.
Mm-hmm. This woman was gorgeous, too.
She's really hot. And then she started giving me a blowjob under the blanket. And I was
you've gone way too quick.
Yeah, I know. How do you get to the blowjob?
That's where you just went way through the 2 hours. Way too quick.
It was probably less than 2 hours, to be honest. Yeah. It was like, I came...
you've gone too far. Go back to the beginning.
I get on the flight.
Yeah.
And Steve's like, yo, dude, you're in my seat. So I was like, all right, fuck, sorry. And I went and got in my seat. And then
this super hot chick shows up.
This like Venezuelan.
Next to him, and I'm like.
So me and her got along really well. And then it was just one of those silly things where we were talking nonstop and just kind of got into it pretty quickly. And then I was like, oh, it's crazy. We're in the air. It's a pretty smooth flight. And she's like, we're not in the air yet. I'm like, yeah, we're 100% in the air. And she was like, I'll bet you anything that we're not in the air. And I was like, if we're in the air, you got to give me a kiss. And she was like, deal. And she looked out the window, and we were in the air, and then we started just hooking up.
That is, look at that. Like, that was the line I was waiting for. That was the line. Went for it, because it could have gone either way. That line, you know.
Yeah.
She would.
Right. I mean, you know what I mean.
You know. Yeah. You never know. But she was pretty unbelievable, and then we met back up in London. I think she lived in I don't even know where the nice part of London is.
Chelsea, Knightsbridge.
Yeah. Chelsea.
Right,
yeah.
There you go.
And then
hate Chelsea.
It was unbelievable.
Well, yeah, I'm North London. So I fucking hate Chelsea. South London.
Yeah. Were you South London?
Wimbledon? I was North London.
Where's Mike Tindall?
I feel like he's out in the country, man.
Okay.
Yeah.
Anyway, so yeah.
All right, dude. Well, we are again. We're sending people to listen to the new Bush album.
Sweet,
it's called
thank
the
you.
The Art of Survival.
Mm-hmm. It's a universal. This is my most universal title. You know what I mean? I think everyone goes through so much all the time. The challenges of daily modern life, and so.
Yeah, and we're very intrigued by the clothing.
Right, like, Sea of Sound. Yeah, it's
good. Sea of Sound dot design.
Yeah, that's the website, and then Sea of Sound online, and it's easy to
is
find.
Is this shirt a Sea of Sound
it's
shirt?
It's not. I should have worn my shit, but I didn't. We should send you stuff. We'll send you stuff.
Yeah, I'll go on later today and order some for us for sure.
No, we'll send you some stuff too.
Cool.
Yeah,
it'd be really great.
Tour
it's pretty
dates.
Cool. You really like it. It's
of course.
It's pretty cool. It's pretty cool.
Yeah.
I've got this rad thing called the Nutrition Facts. And so I did this basically a guide to humanity. I took it from, I'm obsessed with food and cooking and eating and all that stuff. So I did a nutrition guide guide to humanity. And that's on the back. It's nice. It's a nice thing to it. It gives it context. It's a little bit more than just. It is just clothes, but it's nice to have clothes with a context and sort of a mindset.
Yeah, order some for a bunch of us today.
That'd be amazing.
Yeah, I love it.
Cool.
Let's do it. All right, my man. Dude,
thank you so much.
Dude, thank you, Gavin. Dude,
appreciate that.
It's been
a pleasure. Thank you.
Dude,
thank you so much.
Yeah, pleasure meeting
appreciate
you.
Appreciate that.
All right. Did you fall in love with that guy or what? I mean, come on. I just think he's great. And I think you're great. My beautiful street team. What can I tell you guys? I mean, going to the UK, coming up real soon, and we got these new skateboards that we made, and it's an image on the board. The graphic is of me falling through the sky, blowing a load everywhere. It's a skyjacking skateboard, and I'm really, really wondering if that's gonna be popular. Like, how many people want like a skateboard hanging on their wall that's a guy just coming everywhere. I mean, we're going to find out.